Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast. It is the 18th and it's finally cooler.
Yeah,
the weather got to be much, much better.
And we've been doing it every other week. Been doing the podcast every, I mean, we used to be so faithful every Monday we'd record it and put it up, but.
Well, last week we started to do it and 30 seconds in, I decided that you shouldn't be on the internet that day because you just started to rant. I don't know if you were ranting. You were just
ranting. I was.
Just began. No, it was like festive.
The reason we have not done for two Sundays.
We did it the week before.
Right, but we skipped the week before
that. Yeah, we missed one. Right.
Is because of just terrible discouragement. I mean, waking up on a Monday morning, like it was last, not this Sunday, but last Sunday. I think there's just a massive sickness going through the congregation. Not sure.
Yeah, a really bad. So no one was sick for 2 years, except, you know, dying of COVID.
Right.
So then a bad cold like hit the schools first. It decimated our child's community college. And then it started working its way through town. And I missed church previous, and I'd never missed church.
Yeah, but you're sick.
I was really sick. And then it hit everyone else the next week, like in the whole.
I know. And town. So I come to church. I work all week, and then there's like, yeah, it was like, I think we had about half our congregation missing that Sunday.
Yeah, we had about, like, yeah.
Because very close to have. We, like, assuming we get 120 on a Sunday, which we haven't since COVID hit us, but 120, 130, we were about half missing. And it was just
devastating.
So,
you were very sad.
That hits me like, all. I mean, every Sunday, when that happens, I get so despairing and depressed. And so the next morning I couldn't even do, but then I woke up to an email from a parishioner saying, I'm going to another church now.
And thanks so much.
Yeah. And then another parishioner who I love very much died. That all hit like the Monday morning.
So yeah, we found out when we came home from church that he had died. Like, yeah. I saw that he wasn't there and thought, oh, I wonder why he's not in church. It was because he had already died.
Prisoner had his wife died
in January.
March. Yeah, and he wasn't in bad health. I think he really desperately missed his wife. So it's very sad. Anyway, you may not know it, but you might want to consider, you know, sleeping in on a Sunday morning if you for your pastor's sake.
What do you mean?
I don't think the average prisoner knows just how discouraging it is. For a pastor who works really hard all week. Not saying you should go to church to not discourage your pastor, but go to church to not discourage your pastor.
Well, I do think, like, okay, you feel it most keenly, although I do as well. I get discouraged. But it does, because the church is not just one person,
mm-hmm.
you know, it does... not everybody perceives it
right
the same way, but it is demoralizing, I think, for everyone. But in a time of illness, there's not really anything you could do about it. So you just come home discouraged, and then that's it, and then try to do it again the next week.
But it's just, you know, I mentioned COVID, coming back out of COVID, it's been. Just everywhere, not just our church, attendance has been really low because people are just out of the habit. They've gotten used to, if they anything happens, like, you know, you wake up late, you stay out late the night before, you stub your toe on the way to the bathroom in the morning. It's just like
anything
could get in the way of going now serves because you can just watch it on the live feed.
Though that it's more because the people who miss I think in our congregation regularly are not. Well, definitely there are some people who are probably in that kind of world, but mostly I think people don't know how to navigate the illness factor anymore. Because everything sounds like COVID symptoms, and you're not supposed to go anywhere if you have COVID symptoms. And so trying to figure out how.
Yeah.
No, I've been doing that in my own life over and over again. Like, what do we all have allergies? Should we just stay inside for the entire winter because we do have allergies sometimes? Or, you know, I it's kind of unnerving knowing that other people will be really sad if you're around them.
And that's
you
true. Sound
like you have COVID. I feel like it's more nuanced than just people stay home because they don't.
No, I don't. I wasn't speaking particularly about our church. I mean, in general, I think it's gotten easier for Christians not to go to church, especially if their church live streams, because it's easier. If anything, if I think I agree with you, the sickness is there, but I also think before there wasn't the live stream, and so and you just were people just pushed to go to church. I remember this. People were overcoming.
Overcoming
issues.
Where like, is your overcoming? Get, your overcomer.
Yeah. But I mean, I would count myself as that. You know, if I weren't a pastor and had to be there, if I were tired one morning, I might just say, okay, well, I'll just watch the live stream. And I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that's how. I mean, I think that reasoning has started to happen, play itself out in some people's minds.
Well, we know that because there's some tweets. The only reason that we're podcasting this morning is because somebody sent us some screenshots.
Yeah.
And so there's evidence that this is true, even though it's really hard for me to believe because I think that's crazy. But
let me find them. So this tweet, you sent me this tweet this morning.
In Messenger.
Let me find it.
Because.
Okay. Yeah. This is by someone named Kimberly Stover. Here's to all the introverted Christians that feel guilty and pressured into going to church this morning. Even though you want to stay home and not socialize, may you realize that you're not sinning if you want to stay home. Church can be found in a cup of coffee and a sunrise. And then in the comments, you know, she gets people are just praising her, loving this. This is so wonderful. It sounds lovely. Preach. LOL, says Jory Micah, who's a quote-unquote thought leader. And then my new Sunday mornings consist of coffee, a blanket fort in my bed, and a novel. Did she build the blanket fort?
I mean, that's somebody else. I don't know.
No, it's another person I know. Kids eat sugar, cereal, and watch YouTube or play Minecraft. Then we tidy up a bit and go for a hike together. Peaceful, lovely. Yeah, this is the modern evangelical variation of mornings are made from the New York Times, or Sunday mornings.
Yeah, from the except New York that Times. Like those people who wrote that didn't believe in God.
Right. Right.
Like so.
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming that these people also don't really believe in God. I don't know what they believe in, but.
Right.
You can't play Minecraft on Sunday morning and call it church.
Right.
Well, I mean, you can. Like, people just did do that. The other tweet that I like that's going around is that a whole generation of people who read Crazy Love and Radical are now afraid to go to church. I don't know if that's true or not, but...
I do think, we've talked about this many times, I do think a lot of the culture of a personal preference being the thing that's being met at church. And so when it's not met, you either go somewhere else or just don't go. And that's fine because you can worship Jesus anywhere because the church is just a building.
Well, I mean, we've been told a lot that the church isn't a building, which, you know, is interesting because I do think, like, if it's not a building, then you don't have to go there. And... I think it's okay to think of the church like as a building to which you must go,
right,
in order to be with people who are also in that building. Like it, maybe simplify it and just make it more about how you have to get up and go to a building.
You know, we don't, but see, it's interesting though, we don't do that with anything else. Even secularist Americans, but, and I'm sure evangelicals feel the same way. No one goes to, you know, the Gettysburg battlefield and says, this is just a field, or, you know, let's build a apartment complex on this thing and, or, you know, have a strip mall here because this is just a field. Doesn't matter. Everyone.
Well,
most people,
not everyone.
People who have,
some people would say like, we should, because of what happened in Gettysburg, we should go build a mall there now.
Well, people have a modicum of respect. Would say, oh wait, this is a hallowed ground. This is something we should be, even though it is they are just trees and grass and a field. What happened here makes this place a sacred place. And so the kind of utility, I was talking about this in my talk about J.R. Tolkien, but the utilitarian use of a building for a church service, and you just say, it's just a building, it doesn't matter. That, you know, when the church gathers, Christ is there, and the sacraments are given, Christ is there. It's a building, but can you then say it's just a building? Isn't it also, doesn't the fact that Christ is there in a special way, he's in a unique way, in a way he's not when you walk out, although he's everywhere. I know he's on the present, but the presence of Christ in church is in a unique, special way with his people. Doesn't that mean at least we should honor the place as a good thing and a place where Christ has visited in a unique way? I think the church is not just a building. In other words, it's not like going to Walmart. It is a unique place. You walk in, you're now in a different country with a different Lord.
What's interesting is that I'm finally actually getting through Carl Truman's Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, because it's on Audible now. So I kept getting interrupted. It's hard for me to read. But he really, the first part of the book is so helpful because the culture that we have different kinds of people living in one space together with different cultural worldviews. So Christians, he says, are second culture people. They believe in a transcendent reality. And so they are able to say things like, this church building is about God and we can't just do whatever we want to do here. But the third culture, which we're also living in, is an anti-culture. He says is committed to death works. And so there are moral reasons now to go build a mall on Gettysburg, because there is nothing transcendent. The imminent is the only thing that there is. And part of acknowledging that fact is destroying that which is sacred on purpose, as a moral act. And so,
like orcs.
Yeah, it is like orcs. But it also is interesting to me because, I mean, technically the church should not be a third world anti-culture place. But I feel like I'm running into it all, like saying, a purported Christian saying, I am going to build a pillow fort and worship God with my cup of coffee on Sunday morning is not a culture building transcendent option. That's the third world creeping in to the second world,
right,
and undoing it, and leaving the people who do believe in God flabbergasted that you would even say anything like that.
Yeah, there's the culture of so death work is a desecration to undo.
Yeah, so the example of it would, he said, was the Piss Christ.
Oh, okay.
That's like the sort of, but
right.
Other examples are pornography, and even actually abortion is obviously like a literal death work, but pornography takes apart something sacred and desecrates it and leaves it, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing there anymore.
So I was mentioning in my talk about, I mean, it's not a new thing. It goes right back to kind of Marxist analysis of beauty, right? I mentioned in my talk that the Marxist doesn't think the beauty is a thing. You learn to see through it. You have your consciousness raised so that where you have been trained to think of, and I use this example in my talk, of the English countryside as a beautiful thing. The reason you've been trained to think that is because it's guarding the privileges of those who own land. And so you need to see through that so quote unquote beauty and recognize, no, this is just an economic unit that needs to be exploited and used for the people, quote unquote. So you build a factory, you build an apartment complex, you rip that land out of the hands of the private owner and then undo the beauty, and you can help people see through the myth of beauty in that way, so they can see the real thing, which is nothing but economics. Now, I guess I wouldn't. I mean, I'm the death work here. I mean, you can see how the same principle, may not for the same purpose, is going on. So, you have polyamory in an open relationship in a marriage to show how the whole concept of a monogamous marriage between a husband and a wife was just a myth, nothing sacred about it at all. It's just the fact of people having sex, and same the pornography, I guess, is the same thing. And there was nothing. So that's why you build like you were saying, an apartment complex in the Gettysburg battlefield, because there's nothing there.
You would tear down a monument to show that there's nothing sacred about the monument.
But see, now the Marxist though wants to build something new off that. The Marxist thinks he's going to destroy the bourgeois culture and establish a culture of the people, quote unquote. That's not necessarily what's going on with the death work, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, it's moved. That was the first part. He's moved on to, you know, what there's. It's not like there's no culture. There's no moral center. For this, you know, imminent religionless, there is a religion, but what's replaced it is sex,
right?
Just pure, and gender ideology. But it's
what's driving Marxist analysis is class differentiation, the means of production. What's driving, you know, the woke ideology is power differential, like oppressor oppressed binary, and that cuts through the sexual stuff, the misogyny,
yeah,
and the racist stuff. So you everything is really, if you see through it, you're going to see that binary oppressor oppressed. You see it in a husband wife relationship. Clearly the traditional form is oppressive to the woman, so it needs to be undone. The very structure of our society is so shot through with racism that even if you're not a racist any personal issues with people of a different skin color than yourself, you're still a racist because you're a participant in the system. So the system needs to be just torn down, and that's the only way to fix it. It's such a bleak worldview. It's so ugly, I guess. I'm trying to figure out what draws people to that.
I don't want to recapitulate the book, but when all the supports have been taken away that explain why human beings have any meaning at all, and why there's a good thing about being a human person in a body with limitations, natural limitations, biological limitations. When all that has gone away, then you just have to make new meaning, totally untethered. And what I find interesting as you said, it's very bleak. The new meaning that people are making in terms of gender ideology is so fixed. Like, there is only really one way to be transgender, for instance, and that's to look like every other person who's transgender. It's a very fixed look. Mm-hmm. It's a caricature of what a person looks like.
Yeah.
It's not fluid, you know, it's not whatever you want. There's a very particular way of looking if you're going to change your gender, for instance, or if you were going to take apart your marriage. That's not a creative act. You don't end up with something that looks totally different from every other person who's taken apart their marriage. You have the same thing every time.
Right.
Which I find interesting and ironic. Or like, if you're going to skip church, you're going to decide to worship God with your coffee cup. That doesn't move you to do something beautiful and astonishing. Really, what that does is it, you just look like every other person who's right. skipping church, and you're tweeting about Minecraft. Like, it's a very, very flat and a very fixed
right.
place that you find yourself if you decide to not have anything transcendent in your life at all.
It's the same habit of thought that we were talking about a minute ago, the seeing through. Okay, so I can see the thought process. What is church for? It's for worshiping God. Okay, so I can worship God just as easily from my house as in church. So why don't we cut away the excess, the thing that doesn't matter, which is the church, so I can go ahead and worship God in a way that I'm most comfortable with. And really, it turns out to be, you know, it's not that you can worship God better at your home. You can worship yourself better at your home. It makes it easier for you to self-worship when you don't have to be around those other people who make it difficult to self-worship.
Yeah, I love that. Self-worship. That should be like, that's a new
instead
thing.
Of self-care.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to stay home and do self-worship today.
Self-worship and self, because there's self-forgiveness and
yeah.
I love the self-forgiveness thing, but self-worship, yeah.
Because you are not at that, I'm not saying that people who do that are not going to heaven, but I want to say at that point they're violating a direct command from the scriptures, which is to gather together when the church gathers, and they're not seeing the reason for it. There's a reason for it. In Hebrews chapter 10, the reason for it is for mutual encouragement. But there's also like the just other texts in the scriptures, you know, where Paul encourages Timothy to preach the word in season and out of season. The assumption there, of course, is that in season and out of season, there are going to be people to preach to. People are going to be in the church, right? All the strictures you see in the New Testament for discipline, like, okay, this person's done this thing wrong, so, and he's not repentant, so we've got to say, okay, you can no longer be part of the church. Well, that assumes a gathering body that gets together to have some kind of adjudicatory process. Everything you look at in the New Testament, including Paul's letters, which are not written to the universal church but to the local church, everything assumes that a Christian is in the church. There's no such animal, there's no such beast as a believer who doesn't gather with others. And it's so the command to love one another as Christ has loved you, that can't be done at home with your coffee cup, under your tent. Who would build a fort? I'm sorry. Why are you building a fort? How old are you?
No, that's weird.
That's very weird. But that love your neighbor, love one another, the agape. If you are like so crafting your world to where you don't have to be around people that make you uncomfortable, you have your chosen friends who are positive and not negative, your family members, so long as they're affirming, your chosen internet crew who will be around you on Twitter and Instagram. At that point, you don't have to love anybody, at least in the way the Bible calls it. You're just around people you have affection for. you don't have to give yourself over for the good of another, which you have to do in church. Because in churches, you probably, for most people, I bet, except for maybe work, church is the one place you're going to be around. You're being commanded to be around people who annoy you and irritate you, some of them anyway, and still be kind to them and love them.
But I mean, for the last year, we've been told that the best way to love other people is to stay away from them as far as possible.
Right.
Which in a global pandemic is fine for a little while, but you still have to care. You should still have to care for people, even if you need distance from someone for a while, so as not to infect them with something. That love your neighbors, stay away thing isn't a universal and for all time command.
Right, right.
That can go on, but it was, you know, like the things that you really want to hear because you already believe them. People really, really.
Yes, this is what I've been waiting for all my life.
What I've been waiting for.
I mean, I'm an introvert. I totally get not wanting to be around lots of people. But even when I was a young introvert and not a pastor yet, and I was going to church in Houston, I looked forward to it for some reason. I don't know why.
You know why? Yeah. Because like there is a reason why, though. Like, you don't have to wonder why it is that you would want to go be with people that you don't really know very well. It's literally called the Holy Spirit.
Yeah. Right.
Or whatever.
Right. Well, it was a new thought for me. I had a group of friends that I liked, but I didn't, toward that end of high school, I stopped liking going to parties that much. So it was a very strange thing to suddenly want to go and be with a bunch of strangers and listen to music that at that time, you know, I before I became a Christian, I didn't like any kind of classical music, any kind of hymnody. I liked AC/DC and Triumph. And let's see, should I go down on my list?
I don't know. I've never heard of Triumph.
Iron Maiden was cool. So anyway, but I wasn't like, but suddenly I listened to the hymns and I liked them. It was weird. I started listening to classical music. Like I got like the best of like, I went to Barnes & Noble. They used to have the music section in Barnes & Noble. This is like in the 90s, like 95, 94, something like that. And I bought a whole bunch of like the best of Haydn, the best of Mozart's greatest hits.
I'm so humiliated right now.
That was very cool. And, you know, R.C. Sproul's radio show began with that. I think it's Water Music. I'm not sure what it is, but so I thought that's really cool. I wonder what that is. And I kept trying to find it. I couldn't find what piece of music it was. It's really famous. I'm sure you've heard it. My whole life transformed. I'm not sure why. This is kind of about rabbit trail, isn't it? Yeah. Let's talk about me for a while.
Your self Christianity,
right?
I feel like we've beaten the church, why you should go to church thing to be a dead horse. No, we've
like
it.
Today or like usual.
I mean, today, but usual also. I mean, it is all consuming, because it's our job, so it's hard to think about other things on Monday morning, and I have found myself to be more and more bored by everything that I'm reading in the world. And so I've come up against Monday morning podcast, and it occurred to me the other week that we should tape a whole bunch of them so we can, I think that's what people do.
They tape them all at once.
They spend a day and then they release them one at a time or something like that. And
I don't know if that's even possible for us though, because we would get like, we get on a subject and we can't let go. So if we did, like, if we just stopped this podcast and did the next podcast, we'd somehow wind the conversation around back around to.
But see, we do that anyway. Even when we do it every week, we end up talking about church attendance.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason for that. Oops. Sorry. You're right. It's probably because it's Monday morning and that's what we're thinking about. But it's also like, I'm sorry. It's still interesting to me. Whether it's interesting to anybody else. It's just, I guess there's so many things that go into it. Like, what are people thinking about God? What are they thinking about themselves? What are they thinking about? Okay, that's what these tweets fascinated me for. But you're not sinning. Stay home. Drink your coffee. It's great. What? Where do you have to? How do you get there as a Christian? So anyway, I don't think it's always something we should avoid talking about.
No, that's true.
We're having an existential conversation about our podcast. Yeah, on our podcast. Yeah. Who are we?
What should we be podcasting about? What is God calling us? What is your self podcast? You should dig deep and figure it out. Somebody sent me the same person who sent me the thing about the Sunday morning thing. Sent more screenshots of the New York Times, the U.S. missionaries kidnapped in Haiti. 17 missionaries and their families have been kidnapped. Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so that's the New York Times article. Let me read you the comments. They're screenshotted. Ready?
Yeah.
Won't God protect them, though? And God is lowercase. The Christian proselytizing and control under the guise of help nonsense needs to end.
Oh, wow.
Maybe stop portraying the U.S. as a savior, as the savior's victims of the situation, and own up to years of oppression. Just a thought. Is this when we send thoughts and prayers? I'm always unsure. Maybe they should pray harder. Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Wow.
Maybe they should stop mission trips altogether. Is it that crazy of a concept that other cultures, countries don't need Christianity? Maybe they need actual support and supplies. Religion will save none of us. Wow. Stop trying to indoctrinate people into Christianity. I'm betting these events will stop. Imagine the derangement of these parents who bring their children into a country where all this is going on. It's child abuse. I'm sure Christians will use this to further their persecution fetish.
This is fascinating. That's a real shift in culture altogether.
You know, but imagine here, if you run into that thing online and then somebody says, you can worship God at home alone.
Yeah.
I would, if I didn't know better, I would think, okay, I'm actually going to stay home because I don't want to
make these people angry with me.
Yeah. Everyone's so angry.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it goes to that. First two things. Yesterday in class, Christian Ed, we were talking about, we introed evangelism. And one of the things we were talking about is how evangelism is no longer seen, even in some, even in evangelical circles, as a good thing among the woke, because the woke have now seen through it. It's not really about telling people about Jesus. It's really about imposing a culture on somebody else. They've seen through this. It's colonizing, right? So, and so instead of evangelism, we'll use that word proselytization instead of evangelism, because that heightens the
emotional,
the offense of it, right? That's the first thing. Second thing, though, is this goes to a conversation we were having recently about one of the shifts. It's one of an article. One of the shifts that wokeness has brought to evangelical thinking is that, you know, theology is downstream from sociology. So the role of the church is to bow to whatever the sociological findings are. So now, of course, sociology is moving in the woke direction. So the church, you know, should just be a kind of a private organization, nurturing private faith, but not trying to dominate think through sociological claims theologically. I can't remember who's writing this article, but
it was I linked it last week. It was that long thing about last week we were going to talk about Mark Galley and that article, and then we lost our minds during the week.
Yeah.
And so we missed the Mark Galley news cycle.
But the example of this, you're right, we did. The example of this was the article that Gospel Coalition guy.
Oh, Kevin DeYoung.
Kevin DeYoung wrote, reviewing Duke Kwan and someone else's sociological argument for wokeness in the church, basically. And he was, you know, reviewing it from a theological perspective. And the pushback against him was not that his... It wasn't really engaging with his argument, but engaging with his methodology. You are analyzing our sociological argument theologically, and that's not right.
You can't do that.
You can't do that. You should be quiet and accept the assured results of modern sociology, which is
that's a theological statement.
That's a theological statement, and it's also the theological statement that theological liberals have been making for the last 100 years, really, is the church should accept all the social, secularly moral, all the developments of modernity should really be something that the church shapes itself around and receives quietly without objection, rather than trying to exert herself over those things, which is fascinating when you look at, I think this article was saying, when you look at people like Russell Moore and their reception of, I think it was Russell Moore, but deep critiques of the church and the church's refusal to stand with the victims, instead of like asking, is that true? A lot of woke evangelicals now will just be quiet and listen. And they'll take this moral stance of, yes, this critique is just needs to be heard. And they won't push back against it because they've kind of accepted that idea that, okay, theology is secondary to sociology.
Well, it was the way in the article, I think it was the way that the evangelical world received Jesus and John Wayne was one of, we've sinned so much.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
I was shocked by that because I felt like that book was slanderous. It was a slander against what evangelicals said that they believed all that time.
Yeah.
You know, if you took people at face value through the 80s and 90s and listened to what they were really saying about God, they said different things than what Jesus and John Wayne said that they were thinking. but maybe, you know, cultural evangelicalism turned out to be, you know, a hulking great shell.
Yeah.
And self-loathing, you know, right. You don't need self-podcasting, but I think people are super embarrassed about being Christian. Because to one degree or another, they believe, you know, when somebody says you shouldn't colonize Haiti, you shouldn't. That's wicked to spread, tell people about Christianity.
They believe that
there's a violent, you know, maybe they're right.
Yeah.
That comes rather than thinking, well, no, Jesus is the mm-hmm. only name under heaven by which anyone can be saved. So it doesn't matter if the New York Times thinks I should go to Haiti as a missionary. I'm going to go anyway.
Right.
They just the self-doubt and the self-loathing makes people creep back into their house and accept the world's view of them.
Yeah.
Which I'm shocked by because I have never accepted the world's view of me. Like, I don't believe Kristen Dumais is completely wrong about me and right. an evangelical and what I think and feel. She couldn't have been more wrong about my motivations.
Right.
Or Beth Allison Barr or whatever, but I appear to be alone in that assessment.
Well, I mean, Jesus literally said, if the world hates me, it's going to hate you too. So the grid through which the church should immediately set the critique of the secular world is the grid of that, of the hatred. Can the world say some right things about the church sometimes? Yes. But recognize first and foremost that the reason the critique is being leveled is because the world hates Christ.
And that's not a persecution complex.
No.
Like if you say, in fact, it's the opposite because it's not about you. It's not your self-persecution.
Right, right.
You're if you affix yourself to Christ, and then people hate you because you've done that, there's no emotional baggage for that.
Right.
Like, you can take that and die, and it's okay. It's not a complex.
Right.
It's a spiritual union with God. Yeah, I mean,
it's really remarkable. I mean, there was a death step over the weekend about Christians aren't really being persecuted. No Christians are losing their jobs because of their faith.
That's not true.
That's simply not true. In our own parish have people who really can't. I'm not sure how they navigate it, but if they were to,
they're very, very careful.
If they were not to use certain pronouns for people, they could lose their job, right? So, my guess is that the people who don't think Christians are having or being put in positions where they might lose their job, my guess is that those people don't think that it really is a compromise to use pronouns opposite of the biological sex of a person. So, of course, there's no threat there. Or it's not a compromise to embrace woke, the woke ideology being shoved down your throat at the corporate diversity meeting, right? So if you don't say to the woman who's telling you that you're white and therefore racist, if you don't say, oh, you're right, or if you do say, oh, you're right, you're not compromising your faith at all. So it's not a problem. So if you're fired for saying, oh, no, you're wrong, well, that's, you weren't standing up for your faith. You're just standing up because of your
personal preferences.
You're a right-wing conservative person. This is politics, not faith.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an immense divide within Christianity.
Right, right, right.
Because that's not Christian. I mean, it's not Christian
right.
to say to somebody, I mean, don't have to be a jerk. Our child is in community college, and there are people who have explained to her that their names are different than, you know, that they've changed their names and they have different they have different pronouns.
Right.
And so far, it's been interesting to watch our child navigate through that and decide. She's very quiet. I mean, she's not going to walk up to somebody and say, well, that's not your pronoun.
Right.
She's managing to just not call people anything, I think, right,
right
now.
Right. Hey, and, you.
Yeah. Hey. Hey. To be really friendly, to pray for people, and then to try to find things to talk about and be friends. Like, that's.
Yeah.
But the difference between her and everyone else in her school is really sharp. I mean, there are other religious students with whom she, of other religions with whom she has much more affinity than, you know, sort of the vast sea of people in class. So what is so great is that what I had hoped would happen, which would be that we would equip our child to deal with a world that hates God and enjoy herself and not buckle under the pressure, but also not be a jerk. Like, see, appears to have come to pass.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I feel like the not putting them in public school. I mean, again, I'm not, if you put your kids in public school, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying our decision in that regard, I think, was paid off. And for our children in particular, they're not afraid of the secular world, but they're also not shaped by it. So
yeah, they feel keenly the difference between them and everybody else, but not in a persecuted way.
Right,
I guess
right.
that's what, it's okay to notice, well, as you're losing your job because of your faith, to say, I suffer this because of Christ.
Right.
And that doesn't give you a persecution complex. That joins you to the spiritual family of Christ's body, whereby he was willing to die for us, and we are also willing to die. I think that's what's interesting about that particular piece, was that the casting of Christians saying, I'm not able to speak publicly about my faith unless, and that if I do, there'll be repercussions.
Yeah.
To cast that as the same kind of victimology that the rest of the world is embracing, and I don't hear it that way.
Yeah, I don't either.
When Christians say I'm, you know, I'm pressed to the margin, or I can't speak. If I do, I'll.
Yeah, it's just it's a basic statement of truth, really, is what it is. Yeah. And it's just a plain fact. This is where we are. And I don't, going back to our own experience losing our church, I don't remember feeling like a victim. I remember feeling like this is kind of exciting, actually. And, we may lose everything, but wow, this is something we had to do. I think most Christians kind of think of it that way. Not putting themselves in the position of a martyr, but
praying for the people who were acting out of what they thought according to the view of the world that they had to do what they were doing. They had to prosecute a theology that included the disallowed a traditional view of marriage.
Right. Right.
So those people have to go out of the church because they believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. They must get out. So that being so, you know, I don't feel animosity towards those people at all.
Right.
If somebody has to force you to use their pronouns because otherwise their whole world is undone, I'm not angry about that. I think, well, this is an immense opportunity to say to somebody who is so broken and in such a terrible position, you know, Jesus literally died for you. And it's okay. You know, I can pray, you know, the missionaries in Haiti who have been kidnapped, I'm pretty sure are not as angry as the people on the New York Times are. That they were even there. Anyway, we've talked an awful long time.
Yeah. We made up for
We're back.
Yeah, we'll try. Unless no one comes to church next Sunday,
next week is on Monday. I don't know what we can because we're going to be traveling next week.
Oh, you're right.
And so,
you're right.
Maybe we should announce that we're not going to be here next week. Or do you want to try to do it next week?
I don't know if we have the equipment to do.
This would be one of those where we had to do it ahead of time.
Yeah, let's see if we can think about that.
Maybe we'll see. We may be back next week, but don't hold your breath. You can just do your own self-podcasting if we're not here. So thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.